Marquise, always with the good music. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We now say hello and good morning to John Glennon from The Athletic. John, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Happy anniversary.
Oh, thank you very much.
Or is it belated happy anniversary? You made it another year.
That.
How about that?
It is. Big day for the Glennons yesterday, so we enjoyed it.
Nothing like a quarantine anniversary.
Yeah, we went all out, all kinds of restaurants, quick jet out to the Caribbean and back. It was crazy.
Oh, I know these guys are going to get into some of the things that you and your colleagues have been writing at The Athletic. I'm just going to ask you just some Titan stuff and let them get into the articles. We've been kind of talking about, if you just look on paper, I've said it's hard, I believe, to make the case that this team has actually gotten better in the offseason when you think about losses of Jack Conklin and, you know, Logan Ryan and Jarrell Casey and Dean Pease as the defensive coordinator. It's really hard to me on paper to say that they're a better team. And now Delanie Walker's out of the mix, and so now it's all up to Jonnu Smith. But with that being said, it doesn't mean that they can't be a better team. Guys are going to have to then take the next step, right? They're going to have to increase what do they bring to the table. Who are a couple of guys you would identify that they need more production out of to help them be a better team in 2020?
Well, you know, I think you mentioned, probably a couple of them there. I think like Jeffrey Simmons, I think is one, you know, everybody appreciated what Jeffrey brought to the table last year. But I think he's going to have to up it a notch this year because he's going to be essentially moving into Jarrell Casey's old position there. And as much as we saw out of Jeffrey Simmons, we have to realize too that he had no off season, no training camp. And then I think you're going to see a 10-20% better Jeffrey Simmons coming up in 2020 than you did in 2019. And remember also that he's been training in the facility this whole time during the pandemic. He was allowed to do so because he was always recovering from injury. So I think certainly he's one guy. And then, you know, the cornerback spot they're going to have to make up. And I think, you know, in general you can say rookies. One clearly at the corner spot. How much is Christian Fulton going to be able to give you there, considering the fact that it's going to be a shortened off season, probably not as much time to learn as you'd like ideally, but can he be, can he replace what Logan Ryan was giving you, and can Jonathan Joseph supplement that as well as a depth corner? And at right tackle as well, you know, is Isaiah Wilson, you know, as much as they like Isaiah Wilson, I think there's a little bit of a rawness to his game, and again, with a shortened off season and maybe not as much time hands-on teaching, is he going to have enough to be right there in that starting lineup and be a, you know, powerful part of that starting offensive line as you would like to replace Jack Conklin, or are the Titans more going to kind of hold that spot with say a Dennis Kelly until Isaiah Wilson is ready to roll? So, you know, I think those are certainly some of the guys. And you know, I think a guy like an Adam Humphries, too, we saw some flashes from Adam Humphries last year, but, you know, he missed a lot of time with injury. So I think the Titans are really looking forward to getting a boost from him as well. And hey, as long as we're on wide receivers, I think Corey Davis, you know, has to have better numbers than he did last year. You know, we know that they didn't pick up his fifth-year option, but, you know, there's still a talented guy there, and it was disappointing, I think, for the Titans to see a drop in numbers for Corey last year. So, you know, I think a jump back to where he was at least in the previous year is going to be expected.
You know, free agency is truly hit or miss. Sometimes it comes up big. Sometimes it really doesn't. I mean, I think they like a guy like Brian Arakpo, right? I think that worked out. You would say that was good for them. A guy like Cameron Wake last year, it was good at first when he was healthy, right? I mean, he looked very good. What do you have, 2.5 sacks in the Browns game to start the season? I mean, he got off to a really good start, and obviously his body didn't hold up, and injuries plagued his season. So overall, it didn't work. So that's usually how it works, and that's for every team in the league. So here we are with Vic Beasley, a position they desperately need to get production out of. Whether Clowney comes here or not, they're still going to need him to be better than he's been in Atlanta, minus the one season. So what do you think they truly have in Vic Beasley, and can he be one of those free agent signings that's a hit?
Certainly has the potential, I think, to be a hit. You know, and I think what the Titans are counting on is that the tools are there, that, you know, the speed is there, the ability to get to the quarterback from the edge is there, but it certainly hasn't been consistent during his years in the league. You know, he had that great year, certainly, second year in the league. I think he had about 15 sacks and I believe led the league that year. Then dropped to 5 in consecutive years, and last year was back to about 8. But, you know, I think what the Titans are kind of banking and hoping is that, you know, this is a position outside edge rusher or linebacker. This is a position that Mike Vrabel played and played pretty well over the years. You know, so if anybody can get this guy, you know, back on the path that he had earlier in his career, and getting a more consistent production from, it's going to be Mike Vrabel. So I think that's what they like. I think they like a raw ability. Now it's just a matter of making sure that motor is always going. You know, as I say, that they get more consistent production. I think it's a chance. I think it's a little bit of a risky pickup, to be sure. But, you know, it's a one-year deal, so they're not strapped in too much for Vic Beasley. You know, and I think, again, if you can get something from Vic Beasley, I think that opens things up also more for Harold Landry, too. You know, I think the more pressure you can get from the other side, that frees up Harold Landry to potentially be even more productive than we've seen from him.
Talking to John Glennon, who's covering the Titans for The Athletic. And, John, you had some really interesting points about the whole Logan Ryan situation. And first, I want to get your thoughts, because you use it a lot, and that's Pro Football Focus. And you're not the only one. There's a lot of people that use that service. And you do have some people that, you know, just like with any analytic service, you can go to any sport and any angle that analytics are used, and you still have some people that will challenge some of those things, rightfully so. But you point out in your article that, you know, every team looks at this stuff. That, you know, they don't completely blow it off, so it has to be a factor. But tell people how you try to use Pro Football Focus as a tool.
Well, you know, I think what I like most about it is it kind of goes beyond, you know, sort of the traditional stats, and that's sort of what I used it for in the Logan Ryan story. You know, if you look at the more traditional stats for a guy like Logan Ryan, you look at a career year without question. You look at a guy that you say, hey, how come this guy wasn't in the Pro Bowl? You know, he had 120 tackles. He had career best in sacks, you know, passes broken up, forced fumbles, et cetera. So you kind of scratch your head and you're wondering, okay, you know, why isn't any team signing this guy, you know, for $10 million or whatever? Where are the big contract offers? Why aren't the Titans more interested in bringing him back? That's when I think, you know, kind of more advanced statistics, a deeper statistical pool like Pro Football Focus comes in handy, because you can see sort of the other side of the coin a lot of times. And in Logan Ryan's situation, you look at some of the negative numbers that were attached to him last year. Most receptions given up by a cornerback, 80, and that was 10 more than the next highest. Most receiving yards given up. Most yards after the catch given up. And, you know, and even when you went to strictly plays, you know, from the slot, a slot cornerback, the numbers were similarly high as well. So I think, you know, you use those stats, those kind of stats that go a little deeper, and the more traditional stats to kind of give you a full picture of what the player is. And as you mentioned, Willie, I think in the early years when, you know, Pro Football Focus was coming out, I think there were a lot of skeptics and doubters. But I think they've proven themselves pretty well over the years. And I think the teams themselves are certainly using a lot more analytics and deeper dives these days. And I think that's a reason, you know, when you look at a guy like Logan Ryan, you know, it's not just that the Titans haven't re-signed him. It's that, you know, nobody in the league has re-signed him Maybe that's because his price is too high and the teams are looking at this complete picture, not only at those traditional stats in which he really excelled last year, but some of the other stats in which things didn't go so well for Logan Ryan.
I think it's an example of how things have evolved over years, for sure. I think there was a time where those eye-popping stats, and they were eye-popping, conventional stats, would have absolutely equated to a bigger contract. But I think teams have definitely changed how they evaluate because they have these tools here. But let me challenge a couple of the numbers, John, because sure. I think this is where if I'm Logan Ryan, I'm going to say, okay, well, what about this? You mentioned he gave up more in the cumulative yards, like more completions, more yards. But as you pointed out, he was on the field for so many snaps, right? So that's going to have more chances to give up completions and yards. And they obviously threw at him more. So how did that work relative to others? You know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying he's the best cover corner in the league, but when you're out there so much more, you're going to give up more.
Yeah, I agree. In fact, I always look at the comments after my articles as well, and a couple of readers brought up that point. They said, how did that factor in, the fact that he was on the field, close to 100% of the time always? And I went back, and Pro Football Focus, again, does a pretty good job of breaking down those kind of stats as well. It's, receptions per snap. He was on the field, and even then, when you break it down a little further, still doesn't necessarily go in Logan's favor in that way. I think, I don't have the stat right in front of me, but I want to say it was about a reception per every, 7.8 snaps or so. That figure sticks in my mind for some reason. And when you compare that to other corners in the league, I think at a corner who had played at least 300 snaps last year, I think that ranked 90th, tied for 90th out of 93 in terms of the frequency of the times that passes were completed on Logan Ryan's watch compared to others. So even factoring that in, and then honestly, some of those numbers did surprise me as well, because certainly we all saw Logan put up some great plays last year. But really, even when you factored that in, the time he was on the field, those numbers did not go well for Logan Ryan. So again, I think it's a complete picture. I don't think any NFL team or any fan should just say we're strictly looking at Pro Football Focus. But it rounds out a profile of a player, I think, in addition to what you look at in the more traditional stats.
Yeah, it's a really interesting debate that I think goes on in every sport, because the eyeball test is still valuable, right? And also,
sure,
the real answer, probably if you're John Robinson, is to go to the coaches and starting with Mike Vrabel and say, did he do the job that we were asking him to do, despite on what the numbers might tell you one way or the other, positive or negative? And going forward here, what's he worth? But I think it's fascinating that, as you mentioned, it's not like everybody else is beating down the door to pay him even the same that he made last year.
Yeah, and he made it, very clear. I assume through his agent that word got out that, hey, I'm willing to play on a 1-year deal. All I want is, what I was making, $10 million. And this was after that, the first big wave of free agency, and that announcement didn't open up the floodgates, by any stretch. When you look at, what corners are making around the league, I looked at it a minute ago, and it seems like there's about, I think, somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 corners who are going to average $10 million or better for next year. Some you look at and you say, wow, I'm surprised that he's getting that. Others are more recognizable. But, I think the point is, if you're going to pay a guy that kind of money, you have to recognize him not only as being an important part of the team, but as being one of the better cornerbacks in the league. Now, can you, you can make an argument for Logan Ryan, again, using some of those other statistics. He was a stat stuffer without question last year, and we remember certainly some huge plays, including the pick against Tom Brady. But there were obviously two, an awful lot of receptions surrendered. So it's an entire picture, and obviously, as you mentioned, I don't think it would be one thing if the Titans balked at $10 million and five other teams were battling it out, setting a new market for them. But that hasn't been the case so far. So I think the other teams too are taking a look at the complete picture of Logan Ryan.
John Glennon of The Athletic is here with us on Darren, Donick, and Chase. And John, Darren started this interview with asking, your opinion of this team and how they got better and whether you can say that they are better than they were last year. One position that they needed to address, and it was something that was brought up quite a bit, was that backup running back position. I enjoyed your piece that you did on Darrington Evans from App State and the small town of Oak Hill that he's from and playing at New Smyrna High School. But as I've learned more about this young man, because let's be honest, I didn't cover App State football. I didn't watch App State football. So as I've learned more about him, I feel like that he truly is the type of running back they were looking for to complement Derrick Henry that can be that change of pace and have different roles. So what were some other things that stood out to you when you were learning more about him?
Yeah, I like everything so far, what I'm hearing about Darrington Evans too. And what I really thought was important as far as the Titans are concerned also was in talking to some of his former coaches at App State, both of them made a point to talk about how, smart this guy was in terms of he's the kind of guy that would know not only what the running backs are doing, but what the wide receivers are doing as well, the kind of guy that gets an entire picture of the offense. And in addition, the kind of guy who picked up on pass blocking very quickly as well. I think one of the assistant coaches I talked to said, he really saved us a few times in picking up hot guys that were blitzing the quarterback. And that's key, obviously, for the Titans, because in order to get on the football field on third downs especially, you have to be able to protect if, you're useless to the team if you can't protect on those passing situations. So I think that's one thing that struck me was his intelligence, and one maybe because the Rubik's Cube has been around since I was a youngster, but this is a guy, Darrington Evans, that figured out the Rubik's Cube in about 2 days or 2.5 days, he said, and about two decades for me. I'm still working on getting one side of that thing put together. So, but that was one thing that stood out was his smarts, and then I think obviously the other is just the explosiveness for Darrington Evans. I think the stat that really stood out to me was over the last two seasons, 11 runs of 50 yards or more. That's a lot, in two seasons. And I think that combination of, if you get Derrick Henry pounding on you for about two-thirds of the game, and then all of a sudden you get this 4-4 guy coming in and flying through those same kind of holes, and I'm not saying that Derrick Henry is slow by any means, but Evans has a different gear. I think that's really an ideal compliment. I think I'm really looking forward to seeing what he brings to the table.
What do you think a realistic workload would be for him, though? I mean, you mentioned Derrick Henry, pounding on you. You want to get as much out of him as possible, similar to what you had last year. But, and he's playing right now, at least, on the franchise tag. So you have that he might be trying to prove it again. But what do you think the realistic workload for somebody like Evans will be?
I don't think it'll be a ton in terms of running the ball. My guess, and it probably varies from game to game, of course, as well. If Derrick Henry is for some reason struggling, maybe Darrington Evans gets a few more runs. But my guess, just off the top of my head, would probably be, no more than, say, 5 to 10 carries a game. But I think the Titans probably would be hopeful of at least two or three receptions per game in the early going, and again, if Darrington Evans starts to show some real explosion, you get him on the field a little bit more. It's a good problem to have. Hey, do we go with the NFL's leading rusher, or do we go with a guy that has some real explosiveness and really has shown he can catch the ball coming out of the backfield? It's a pretty good situation to have. And remember, too, that when Darrington Evans came to Appalachian State, there was a question as to whether he was going to be a wide receiver or a running back. And I think, really, for the first season, he did a lot of kind of whether it was slot or you know, wide receiver. So I think there's a little bit of that background too, and maybe, you know, if the Titans can tap into that, you know, maybe get a little versatility out of Darrington Evans as well, and who knows, maybe get both those guys on the field at the same time.
Good stuff, John. Appreciate the visit, as always. Best show you've watched to this point while we've all been indoors is what?
Oh, goodness. You know, it started out as Tiger King, but by the end I was so disappointed in humanity. I can't go with that for Tiger King. I'll have to go with Ozark.
Yeah.
We're on the verge of finishing up Ozark tonight, I believe.
So, oh, wow. All right.
Yeah.
Strong. Wait a minute.
It's going to be a big night.
Okay, so how many episodes? Just the final episode, or are you going to try to knock out a couple episodes? Where are you in season
three? No,
this
is the final episode tonight for Ozark. So I'm looking for big things to happen.
Pour a drink, your favorite drink, put it right next to you, sit back, you and the wife, and relax and buckle up. It's going to be a bumpy ride, my friend.
Okay, can we ask John the question that we debated a couple weeks ago, Darren, as you and I crossed episode 9? Since it's fresh in your mind, John, I thought episode 9
was
extremely
very
compelling.
Disappointed in episode
and
9.
Darren wasn't a big one. I thought it was brilliant.
10 will blow your mind. 9, I did not like at all.
Give me a little hint of an refresher on 9 so I can.
Okay, on 9, 9 would be
Wendy and her brother, right? Is that
brother.
Right?
Oh,
yeah.
The brother.
It comes to a climax with the brother.
Yes.
Yeah, right. And I think, now I may be wrong going into 10, but I'm thinking Bro is still around. That's my guess. You know, they left it as kind of that up in the air. That looked like Bro was about to get killed, but I'm thinking her brother there is a pretty able guy when it comes to defending himself. So I have a feeling he's going to be around, and there's still going to be a lot of volatility left in her brother. That guy's kind of scary at times. So I'd be surprised if I don't see him in 10 tonight.
I yawned a couple times in episode 9, too much time sitting in the grocery parking lot. I promise you, you will not yawn episode 10 tonight.
Darren, you've got to get into the mind of the character. It's not all about action and running around and you know, shooting people, whatever. The mind games.
In my mind,
the decisions.
It is.
this is what stimulates me. I think John he exercises his mind. He's fine. I think he can appreciate the conversations going on in the car.
Well,
I thought those are good. Yeah, the brother. Now, just promise me, if you can, that we won't see any repeats of, what was it, episode 5. You know, I guess that has sort of continued the storyline between Darlene and the youngster Wyatt. Are we gonna? Is that gonna scare us again in episode 10?
We cannot.
It's quite creepy.
We cannot confirm or deny anything. Yeah. All bets are off in episode 10. I'm just going to leave it at that. To finish out season 3, all bets are off.
All right. I'm ready. I'm going to settle in about an hour maybe. I think at this point I can't hold back anymore.
You're not going to make it to tonight after this.
No. I'm breaking out the bourbon right now.
All right. Good stuff. Thank you, John, for the visit.
All right. Thanks, guys.
John Glennon from The Athletic. I loved Ozark. That's been my favorite to this point, even though there's a line that I use all the time in Peaky Blinders that I can't use on the air. That's my favorite, too. But anyway, we'll come back and wrap up the first hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase on ESPN 102.5 The Game.